News of the Times. Frightful Fridays. A Scottish murder love triangle. Welcome to News of the Times. In today's episode, it is 1765, County Forfa in Scotland. Thomas Ogilvie, 40-ish, has married the beautiful daughter of Sir Thomas Nairn, Catherine Nairn, who is some 21 years of age. Shortly after the marriage, in sweeps dashing Patrick Ogilvie, a lieutenant from the East Indies, who is welcomed into Thomas's house, where he stays. It is a matter of some short weeks before Catherine and the handsome Patrick, the brother of her husband, are having a torrid affair that is so obvious. It is the talk of the staff, the neighbourhood, and her husband. The long list of locations where they clandestinely come together includes the outhouses. The affair becomes so obvious and highly scandalous that Thomas is forced to act. He banishes his brother from his house and forbids Catherine to communicate or meet with Patrick again, a rule she utterly ignores. But the clandestine meetings are not enough for either of them. Additionally, if Catherine has no offspring by Thomas, Patrick would be the laird. This passionate and treacherous tale from 1765 in Scotland was the most sensational case in its day. We take a look at the background, the crime, and the capture, or not, of the scandalous Ogilvie family in 1765 Scotland in today's episode of Frightful Fridays. We hope you enjoy the show. Background. Bookish 40-something Thomas Ogilvie lives with his mother in his family estate at East Milne in County Forfa in Scotland. Thomas was the eldest of three brothers. His younger brother, Patrick, was a soldier within a regiment in the East Indies. The youngest brother, Alexander, did not live on the estate, but oddly, Alexandra's mistress, Anne Clark, did. As Thomas is the eldest, all property and inheritance belongs to him. At his death, the whole of the estate would be passed down to his own son. If he had no son, the whole of the estate would be passed down to the next eldest son, his brother Patrick. Catherine's father, Sir Thomas Nairn, has recently died. Shortly thereafter, Thomas Ogilvie began his wooing of the then 19-year-old Catherine Nairn. She was considered a good match by both families. Catherine agrees to marry the considerably older Thomas Ogilvie. The wedding takes place on the 31st of January 1765. In Scotland at the time, women would sometimes keep their maiden name, so Catherine is referred to as Catherine Nairn. It is shortly after the wedding that Patrick Ogilvie, back from his East India expedition, returns to the family home. It doesn't take long before the dashing Patrick Ogilvie and the young Catherine Nairn connect in what seems to have been an explosively passionate affair. From the Newgate Calendar, 1769, Patrick Ogilvie, the brother of Thomas, having served as a lieutenant in the East Indies, returned to Scotland soon after the celebration of the nuptials and went to congratulate his brother on the occasion. From this visit arose all the scenes of distress which gives rise to the following narrative. For Patrick, having beheld his sister with eyes of unwarranted love, they were seen within 3 weeks after the wedding by the servants, walking in the fields with too great familiarity, and kissing each other with all the fondness of enraptured lovers. Soon afterwards, Anne Clark, a kinswoman of Mr. Ogilvy, paying a visit in the family, remarked a great intimacy between the lovers, who frequently went to bed together without the precaution of shutting the chamber door. Mrs. Clark remarked on the scandalous impropriety of the lady's conduct, but, so far from blushing at it, Catherine boasted of her love for her brother-in-law, with whom she said she would abscond or otherwise give a dose to her husband, whom she detested. Mr. Ogilvy the elder was of so pacific a disposition that, although the criminal conversation became every day more conspicuous, he contented himself with representing to his brother how much he dishonoured the family by so sinful a practice, but he did not even forbid him in the house. At length, he paid the lieutenant a sum of money bequeathed to him by his father, and then Patrick departed to take the diversions of the country. But he still corresponded with his sister-in-law, and they left letters for each other under a stone, and even occasionally met together in the fields. Anne Clark, unmarried partner of Alexander Ogilvy, would become one of the most important witnesses in the case. Anne Clark gave 17 pages of testimony in court. It's important to remember the lines of succession. Upon the death of Thomas Ogilvy, were he to have no children, the estate would be handed to Patrick Ogilvy. Should Patrick Ogilvy die, the estate would be handed to Anne's partner, the youngest of the three brothers, Alexander Ogilvy. Catherine and Patrick have been playing a dangerous game with their obvious affair, as according to the law at the time, Catherine and Patrick are now sister and brother by her marriage in the family. Legally, their relationship is considered incest, a very serious crime indeed. The deed, as serious as it is compounded in that Thomas and Patrick are brother German. That means they both have the same mother and father. From the Scots Magazine, the 1st of July, 1765, indictment in His Majesty's Advocate against Catherine Nairn and Patrick Ogilvy. By the law of God and the laws of this and all other well-governed realms, the crime of incest committed betwixt a man and the wife of his brother German, especially when such crime is committed within the dwelling house of the injured husband, where the offenders were cherished and entertained by him with confidence and trust, is a heinous crime, and most severely punishable, and, particularly by an act passed in the Parliament of Scotland in the year 1567, being the first Parliament of King James VI. The clandestine meetings are not enough for Catherine and Patrick. There is some historical argument as to whose idea it was to kill Thomas, Catherine's husband, and Patrick's brother, but it is agreed that both were involved. Letters are exchanged between the two upon Patrick's departure from the family estate, and an agreement is made between them to kill Thomas. Patrick, now living elsewhere, purchases some laudanum that he requests for his own purported health issues. He also purchases some arsenic, supposedly for some dogs. Servants become involved in the sending of poison by Patrick to be hand-delivered to Catherine. From the Scots Magazine, the 1st of July 1765, indictment in His Majesty's Advocate against Catherine Nairn and Patrick Ogilvy. In so far as you, Catherine Nairn, have been married to Thomas Ogilvy in the month of January last, in this present year of 1765, and you, Patrick Ogilvy, having about that time returned from abroad and taken up residence at the house of Eastman belonging to the deceased Thomas Ogilvy, your brother, in the parish of Glenya in the county of Forfa. You, Catherine Nairn, did, soon after your marriage, alienate your affections from your husband and fall into a course of indecent familiarities with Patrick Ogilvy, which soon became the subject of observation and regret to your unhappy husband and to your friends and family. Notwithstanding repeated admonishments given to you, Catherine Nairn, and to you, Patrick Ogilvy, by Thomas Ogilvy and your other relations, to abstain from such indecent familiarities, obstinately persisted therein, frequently retired together, and continued in private for a considerable time, as well in the fields as within the house of Eastman and other houses and places of that neighbourhood. You, Catherine Nairn, and Patrick Ogilvy, yielded to your inordinate desires, did after marriage, in the months of January, February, March, April, May, and June, and before the 12th day of that last month, at different times, and in one or other of the rooms of the house at East Milne, and in the outhouses adjacent thereto, lie together, and abuse your bodies with one another, and each of you committed the abominable crime of incest. Your indecent conduct, having at last become the subject of observation and just censure, not only to the deceased Thomas Ogilvy and his family, but to the neighbourhood, you, Patrick Ogilvy, on that account, dismissed by Thomas Ogilvy from his house on or about the 23rd day of May last, and you, Catherine Nairn, did upon that occasion and thereafter express your resentment against your husband by the most outrageous behaviour. Before you, Patrick Ogilvy, left the house, or soon after, you and Catherine Nairn did treacherously and wickedly conspire to murder Thomas Ogilvy by poison. From here, Anne Clark gives voluminous testimony, stating that she had been confided in by Catherine, that Catherine intended to kill Thomas. Anne goes on to share many alleged romantic, surreptitious encounters between the two, including having heard the two having sex within the house. From the Scots Magazine, the 1st of July 1765, indictment His Majesty's Advocate against Catherine Nairn and Patrick Ogilvy. Upon different occasions, you, Catherine Nairn, signified your wicked purpose to Anne Clark, daughter of the deceased Alan Clark, officer of excise, who then lived in family with you, and informed her that Patrick Ogilvy had undertaken to provide the poison, which she did not then believe either of you capable of, and endeavoured to divert you from such a wicked thought. But you, Catherine Nairn, and Patrick Ogilvy persisted in your wicked conspiracy, and from the time you, Patrick Ogilvy, was from your brother's house, you, Catherine Nairn, carried on correspondence by letters and private meetings together for the purpose of concerting the preparation of your wicked design. One of these letters, without a date and unsigned, but of the handwriting of you, Catherine Nairn, will be produced in evidence against you. For the purpose of accomplishing the murder concerted betwixt you, you, Patrick Ogilvie, did, about the latter end of May last year, repair to the burgh of Brechin in the county aforesaid, and there bought and received from James Carnegie, surgeon in that burgh, a small phial glass of laudanum, which you pretended was for your own health, and about half an ounce or more of arsenic pulverized and put up in three or four doses in separate paper covers, pretending that you had occasion for that poison in order to kill some dogs which destroyed the game in that part of the county where you resided. You, Patrick Ogilvie, brought poison to Aelth, within a few miles from East Milne, where you arrived on or about the 3rd day of June last. Upon the following day, you did receive a letter from Catherine Nairn, which, by her orders, was delivered to you in private by Elizabeth Sturrock, her servant, to which you returned an answer that same day with the same servant, by a letter, with instructions to deliver it privately to Catherine Nairn, which was done accordingly. Upon the day following, being the 5th day of June, Andrew Stewart, having had occasion to go to the house of East Milne, you, Patrick Ogilvie, did send with him two small phial glasses, one of which, you said, contained laudanum, and a paper with directions about the manner of using it, and also a packet, which you said contained salts, and a letter closed with a wafer, and likewise sealed with wax, addressed to Catherine Nairn at East Milne. You informed Andrew Stewart that these were medicines for the use of Catherine Nairn herself, and desired him to deliver them and the letter privately into her own hands. You, Catherine Nairn, having been previously advised by Patrick Ogilvie that he was to send the poison by Andrew Stewart, watched his arrival at the house of East Milne, and, upon his coming there, conducted him into a private room and received from him the above particulars, which you presently locked up in a drawer along with the letter without reading the same. Andrew Stewart, who is seen to arrive at the house and in a private closed-door meeting with Catherine, is questioned in a friendly manner by Anne Clark. Andrew freely divulges that he has passed on medicine for Catherine's health that have been sent to her by Patrick Ogilvie, who is now staying a few miles away. Anne testifies as to her alarm and states that she informs Thomas's mother of her concerns and advises that Thomas should take no meat or drink directly from the hands of his wife, Catherine Nairn. From the Scots Magazine, the 1st of July, 1765, indictment, His Majesty's Advocate against Catherine Nairn and Patrick Ogilvie. Andrew Stewart, having some time after his arrival there, disclosed to Anne Clark that he had brought some medicines from Patrick Ogilvie, which he had delivered to Catherine Nairn. Anne Clark did thereupon disclose to Andrew Stewart and to Isabel Mackenzie, the mother of Thomas Ogilvie, her apprehensions of danger to Thomas Ogilvie's life. All these persons, or some of them, did that night advise and caution Thomas to take no meat or drink from his wife except what he saw others taking. Thomas Ogilvy did that same night sup with his wife and the other persons above named in his ordinary state of health, and he went to bed at the usual time of night, having been abroad the previous day. That next morning, the 6th of day of June, breakfast was set in the parlour earlier than usual, and Thomas Ogilvy, not having got out of bed, you, Catherine Nairn, filled out the first of the tea in a bowl, which you said you were going to carry up to the laird, your husband. You accordingly left the parlour with the bowl in your hand. But instead of carrying it straight to your husband, you went into a closet adjoining to his bedroom, where you remained for some time, and there, wickedly and feloniously, mixed the arsenic which you had received as aforesaid, or some other deadly poison, into the bowl of tea, which you afterwards carried to your husband and pressed him to drink the same, which he accordingly did. Whatever is in his tea does not take long to severely impact Thomas. From the Scots Magazine, the 1st of July, 1765, indictment His Majesty's Advocate against Catherine Nairn and Patrick Ogilvy. Soon after, he rose from bed, went abroad, conversed with some of his tenants and servants, and then appeared to be in his ordinary state of health. But before he got back to the house, and within the space of an hour or thereabouts, after he had drunk the said bowl of tea, he was seized with a violent retching and vomiting, and having got into the kitchen, he continued there for some time in great distress. He was helped to his own room and laid in bed, where he remained retching, vomiting, and purging, with such violence that he sometimes appeared convulsed. In the intervals of his distress, he did say to his friends and others about him that he had been poisoned by the said bowl, of which he had got from his wife. Having called for his servant for water to drink, which was brought to the room by Anne Sampson, his servant-maid, in the same bowl, or one like to that out of which he had drunk the tea, he said, "Damn that bowl, for I have got death out of it already," and ordering her to bring up the water in the tea-kettle, for he would be drinking out of nothing else. Having continued in the situation above described for several hours, his tongue swelled, and his mouth became so parched that he could scarcely speak. During his illness, though from the beginning very alarming, you, Catherine Nairn, not only endeavoured to hinder his friends and neighbours to have access to him, but when you were pressed by Andrew Stewart to send for a surgeon, you obstinately refuted that proposal, till near when Thomas Ogilvy, your husband, appeared to be then very low and near his end. You sent a servant on horseback to bring Peter Make, surgeon at Alth, who accordingly came with all dispatch. But before his arrival, your husband was dead, having died in the night betwixt the 6th and 7th days of June last. From the symptoms of his disorder and the whole circumstance of the case above recited, it evidently appears that he died by the poison which was mixed and given to him by you, Catherine Nairn, in the bowl of tea as above mentioned. He experienced the most excruciating pains in his bowels, accompanied with a violent retching, which was the consequence of the draught, and at 9 at night, Mr. Ogilvy expired in the greatest agony. after a marriage of little more than 4 months, during which he scarcely enjoyed one happy day. The newspaper reports seemed to be quite clear that there was immediate suspicion. With suspicion comes the wish for the authorities to inspect the body. From the Scots Magazine, the 1st of July, 1765, indictment His Majesty's Advocate against Catherine Nairn and Patrick Ogilvy. After some days thereafter, when it was proposed to inspect the dead body, you appeared like one distracted and cried out, "What will I do?" And you, the said Patrick, being advised of the death of the said Thomas Ogilvy, your brother, you, whom you are heir in case the sad Catherine Nairn be not with child, you immediately came to East Milne, took up residence there, and gave orders for the interment. The two are arrested on the double charges of suspicion of murder and suspicion of incest. Helpful Anne Clark writes to the youngest brother, Alexander, informing him of the events, and he arrives to witness the testimony and trial. From the Newgate Calendar, 1769, his brother Alexander now gave directions respecting the funeral, but in the meantime, Mrs. Clark wrote to a younger brother of the deceased, who was then a student at Edinburgh, intimating her suspicion that Mr. Ogilvy had been poisoned. Hereupon the young gentleman set out for East Milne, being determined to inquire into the real state of the case. He took with him the under-sheriff of the county and two surgeons. The under-sheriff recommended opening the body of the deceased, but as he had not been dead 6 days, and as it was now in the midst of June and the weather intensely hot, this was opposed by the surgeons, lest some noisome effluvia should arrive from the body. The presumed murderers were now taken into custody and committed to the prison of Forfar, whence they were removed to Edinburgh to take their trials in the High Court of Justiciary. The trial. The trial takes place. The prosecution has numerous witnesses to support their claims. Anne Clark is kept away from the others in a protective environment as the star witness. From the Newgate Calendar, 1769, the trial was at length proceeded upon Monday the 12th of August and continued without intermission till 3 o'clock on the Wednesday morning. When the jury retired, and at 4 in the afternoon of that day, they gave their verdict that the prisoners were both guilty. The Lord Advocate now demanded that judgment should be passed on them, but this was opposed by their counsel, who urged that there were several informalities in the trial which would destroy the force of the verdict, as they were incompatible with the principles of the laws of Scotland. On this, a debate ensued, which continued nearly 5 hours, when the Lord Justice Clerk declared that, unless a special plea was stated in arrest of judgment, he would pronounce sentence against the prisoners. Hereupon it was agreed that, on the following day at 11 o'clock, the arguments in writing should be delivered into court, and, when that was done, a further argument of 6 hours ensued thereupon. The counsel for the prisoners, having at length no other plea left to urge, hinted that Mrs. Nairn was with child, but did not pretend to say how far she might be advanced in her pregnancy. With both found guilty, Catherine pleads pregnancy. Matrons are brought in to check Catherine's status, but they are unable to reach a conclusive opinion. Catherine is placed in a cell to wait, with matrons to visit her regularly to check her status. Patrick is condemned to death. He strongly continues to protest his innocence, and a reprieve is requested, but fails. Patrick is executed. From the Newgate Calendar, 1769. On this, sentence of death was passed against Patrick Ogilvie, to be executed on the 25th of September in the Grass Market, Edinburgh, and Mrs. Nairn, being remanded to prison, orders were given for a jury of matrons to be summoned on the following day to inquire into her real situation. The court being once more assembled, the matrons were sworn and retired, and on their return declared that they could not determine whether she was pregnant or not. On this, the judgment against her was suspended till November, and the matrons were directed to visit her frequently in the interval. The utmost interest of the relations of the convicts was now exerted to prevent the disgrace of a public execution by procuring a reprieve for Mr. Ogilvie, who constantly asserted his innocence respecting the death of his brother. The Lord Advocate of Scotland, in reply hereto, insisted that the determination of the Court of Justiciary must be final, as it was a criminal court in which the prisoner had been tried and convicted by a jury of his countrymen. The matter having been maturely considered, Mr. Ogilvie was left to suffer the sentence of the law. At the place of execution, he made an address to the populace, still asserting his innocence, and, as soon as he had concluded his devotions, he was turned off amidst an immense concourse of people, and no sooner was he turned off than, the rope slipping, he dropped to the ground, but, being immediately tied up again, he said aloud, "I adhere to my former confession and die an innocent man." This being said, he was executed and his body delivered to surgeons for dissection. This unhappy man suffered in the Grass Market at Edinburgh on the 13th of November, 1765. Catherine was indeed pregnant and allowed to come to term in her cell. 1 month after she had given birth, an order is issued for her execution. But Catherine manages to escape prison with outside help. She dresses as a man and is transported away with help from a family footman. From the Newgate Calendar, 1769. After she had been delivered a month, an order was issued for her execution, but a short time before this event would have taken place, she escaped from the prison at 9 at night in the uniform of an officer, and an old footman who had lived in her father's family being waiting for her with a post-chaise, they set off together. Mrs. Nairn was not missed till near noon on the following day, and persons were sent express to apprehend her, but she had arrived in London before them. Catherine makes good her escape and manages to avoid the authorities and escape to France. Her newborn baby is left behind. From the Arras Birmingham Gazette, the 7th of April, 1766. Mrs. Ogilvie was at Dover last Friday fortnight, and not having an opportunity to get off for France directly, she returned to London, took a hackney coach, drove to Billingsgate, got on board a Gravesend boat with a gentleman to accompany her, agreed with a tilt boat to take them over to France for 8 guineas, and a guinea a day for waiting for them for 4 days in order to bring them back. But the tilt boat is returned back to Billingsgate without them. The Newgate calendar, the English emblem of morality of the time, had a few choice opinions on the whole matter. From the Newgate calendar, such were the different fates of two people who, as far as we can judge of the affair, appear to have been involved in the same crime. The one dies, avowing his perfect innocence. The other escapes the immediate stroke of justice, which was suspended over her by the most slender thread. Mysterious are the ways of Providence. One pertinent remark will naturally arise on this occasion. That is the absurdity of disproportionate marriages. Mr. Thomas Ogilvie was nearly twice the age of his wife, and had therefore much the less chance of happiness with her. We make this remark for the sake of those parents who may be tempted to compel their children to unequal marriages, on the idea that riches alone can bestow that happiness, which must generally, if not always, depend on consent of mind. That concludes this episode of Frightful Fridays, a Scottish murder-love triangle. We very much hope you enjoyed the show. If you did enjoy this show, we would be grateful if you could like or subscribe to our channel. We upload 5 days a week. Mondays are murderous as we delve into the dark side of Regency and Victorian crime. Wednesdays are wicked, where we pull together stories with a similar theme, such as Doctors of Death. Fridays are frightful, where we look at crimes in a location such as stories from the stage to murder and scandal in the aristocracy. Saturdays is Serial Killer Saturdays, where we investigate serial killer stories from the past. And Sundays is a bit of fun, with a unique mini-murder mystery where you, the listener, have a chance to solve a murderous riddle. On the last Sunday of the month, we offer a 2-hour compilation of stories based around a theme. If you like this channel, you may be interested in our sister channel, Chronicle of the Times, where we offer a lighter side of Victorian and Edwardian news stories, as well as a weekly podcast of stories from authors of the day, such as Dickens, Collins, Benson, and Conan Doyle. Thank you again for watching and listening. This has been News of the Times, and I am Robin Coles.